Professor Allen's Comics Reading Journal for the month of January 2020. Welcome to episode 56 of this podcast series. The concept of the show is to just have a brief chat about what comics I've read since the last time we had one of these brief chats, which should make this pretty much, if you squint, the books that I read during January. These books are listed weekly in blog posts at eyesandearsblog.blogspot.com, and I regularly repost them on my Facebook and Twitter, so you can find those. But those posts do not constitute spoilers for the podcast, since those are just lists, and here there's a little more review, a little more critique, and a little more discussion. But first, a little feedback. Podcasting's Michael Bailey took a few days recently to get caught up on all of the shows on this network, and since he did that at work, he got paid for the pleasure. You're welcome. And he sent in feedback to all the shows. And for the Comics Reading Journal, he said, "Professor Allen, I am amazed at the sheer amount of comics you read and the varied genres you choose from. I've always loved comics as a medium and recognize that superheroes are a genre of that medium and not the medium itself, but I tend to stay in that lane. Your commentary on Archie books are especially interesting. I have tried to delve into that world on several occasions, but rarely make it past the second or third story in a digest. They're well done, just not for me. Though I did enjoy the first issue of Archie 1941 and need to read the rest of that at some point. I've also, Michael, heard good things, though quite different story. I believe it's Archie 1955, where he gets involved in the beginnings of the rock and roll era. And there's nothing wrong with something not being for you, Mike, and recognizing that it might be for others. And you know, there are a lot of people that can't make that leap. So I appreciate that about you. And that's what's great about the variety of comics produced over the years and today. Anybody who's interested in the medium should be able to find something in a genre that they enjoy. I also love, Michael says, that I have embraced the DC Universe app as much as I have. Mike says that he mainly uses it for something to watch while he's on the treadmill. But I love that so much content is available for what I think is a very reasonable monthly fee. The only disappointment comes when a series I want to read isn't there or is missing issues. But I'm sure that will work itself out at some point. I have the same issue with Comixology, though that site produces some head-scratchers when it comes to missing issues in a run. For example, Action Comics 600 is available digitally as part of one of the Man of Steel volumes, but not as a single issue. I'm sure there's some kind of legal or business reason, but I have money that I want to give these people, and that sort of thing just boggles my mind that they won't let me." Let me put a pin in that and agree with Mike on that being weird. In terms of the DCU app, I found the holes in the Adventure Comics Legion run to be surprising and frustrating and seemingly at random. And as I've mentioned before, there are surprisingly few war comics. Like, I can count on my hands and my feet, I guess, the number of war comics I was able to find back in November. Mike closes out by saying that the bar is pretty high this year for getting to be Listener of the Year. We will revisit that theme, but yes, as he says, the Sutherlands are wonderful people, but it's hard to compete with folks that send you original Mike Grell artwork. Take care. Podcasting's Michael Bailey. Yeah, it is hard to beat getting the stuff that the Sutherlands give away, but listeners, that doesn't mean you shouldn't try. And that goes to all of you listeners. I mean, I'm just saying. Old School Ross tweeted out his three simple rules of life in response to last episode, and I think they're worth sharing here. Professor, your pod wisdom has been part of my three simple rules for life. One, get the mail before my wife. Two, happy wife, happy life. And 3, always ensure rule number 1 is met for rule number 2 to be operative. Hoping that 2020 finds your pockets full of quarters and your cheap bins full of funny books. Thank you, Ross. And yes, the getting to the mailbox before the spouse does, that is definitely a key component of the hashtag comic book circle of life. And Luke Giaconetti wrote in, also impressed by the number of books I read in a month. And it's just that compared to others that I see online, I still come up way, way short. And my wife would really like me to lessen that big old pile of to-be-read comics a bit, so I read. But at least I get to live vicariously through you, Luke says, and occasionally partake in the hashtag comic book circle of life, so I've got that going on. The one comic that stood out this month was the reprint of Carnage Mind Bomb, which I also read recently. Marvel did a series of Venom, and specifically Carnage-related True Believers reprints, as a tie-in for the Absolute Carnage event, and for a buck or less with my DC BS discount. You don't need to brag so much, Luke. I mean, how can you go wrong? I remember Mind Bomb from when it was released. Back then it was still newsworthy for a bad guy to get their own comic, even a one-shot. I didn't get it back in the day, likely due to the price point and my limited budget. But given its status as a standalone one-shot, reading it now, for less than a buck, was a treat, a blast from the past. It was creepy and atmospheric, and demonstrated ably that Carnage is really and truly nuts, not just a guy who gets off on killing. Admittedly, you have to be interested, or at least accepting of the character of Carnage, in order to enjoy that comic. But I am fully vested in that corner of the Marvel Universe. And big congratulations to the new listeners of the year, Darren and Ruth Sutherland. I had the pleasure of meeting them at the same Heroes Con, where I got to meet your clan, which was a wonderful experience all around. The two of them are just great people, and the brief amount of time I spent with them drove that home, to the point that I find myself actually being more polite or formal in my correspondence with them. They're just so much classier than me. If they are the aristocratic Count and Countess of Sutherland, then I am a footman of some kind, or, at best, a guy working the door with a halberd and wearing a frilly collar, just saying. But you keep recording them, Professor, and I'll keep listening to them. No, Luke, no. Right now, everybody gather around, rise please. This is a battlefield promotion, and one that is long overdue. Welcome to the table, my friend. Welcome, Sir Luke of the Upstate. Well earned, my friend. Well earned. And we did hear from the Duchess herself. It was an honor to be part of this very special episode of the Comics Reading Journal. Thanks so much for selecting me and Darren as listeners of the year. You gave us a royal treatment with that wonderful fanfare introduction. You and Em are so kind to us. We really appreciate it. It's so fun to listen to your shows that we think we should really be giving the two of you an award. Let me put a pin in this and say to Ruth and Darren that as I look around my room and see the various things hanging on the walls, and look over to my stack of trades and comic books, believe me, you've given us enough of an award already. We're the ones who benefit from your excellent shows. I just know that when I put on one of your shows, I'm going to feel happy, and it always feels like I'm spending time with friends. We always enjoy the year-end analysis of your comic reading statistics. It's interesting to hear the breakdowns by decade, cost, and more. Sounds like you had another good year in comics reading and receiving and occasionally buying. Thanks for bringing us another great year of the Comics Reading Journal. Well, thank you, Ruth. You and Darren deserve all of the plaudits and more. I also wanted to share part of this email conversation that I had recently with Dr. Anthony the Engineer. He sends me such a weird, interesting mix of books, often the first or second issues of ongoing, pretty recent series. So I specifically asked him about that, about how he decides what he buys, how he collects, what he decides to keep reading, what he decides to keep in his collection, what he collects versus reads. And he gave some really interesting answers. Professor Allen, I have definitely evolved into a reader. I do save or collect some books, but I don't even bag and board them anymore. I don't care enough to. I like to try different series. Everything sounds so good. But a book has to grab me in the first three issues or so for me to continue buying at full price. An example of this would be Crowded by Chris Sabella. It grabbed me immediately. I buy this monthly, and right now it's my favorite book. If not, I drop it, leading to lots of number ones and number twos going into boxes for the hashtag comic book circle of life. Now, there is a special case, though. And that happens when I read the first few issues and want to continue reading, but I like it so much that I want others to read it as well. So I do the most logical thing and drop the book. Now, this is me, Professor Allen, commenting, which of course drives the comic book companies crazy. Dr. Anthony says, it saves the individual issue cost, and then I buy the trade. I read the trade, and then I donate it to my local library. This is how I've helped my library grow their trade and graphic novel section. So some of the issues I have sent to you are actually series I liked. And there's a brief glimpse into some of my twisted logic. Okay, Dr. Anthony the Engineer, thank you. I think now we understand that does sort of make sense. Now, I do have to say here, having a library person in the family, I do need to comment on one point. Not all public libraries work the way that Dr. Anthony's does. Most that I've run across will not put donated books on the shelves, but put donated books into their book sale fundraiser area. So ask about that first before donating books to your library. There's nothing wrong with giving books away that they'll sell in order to raise funds, but just understand that if your intention is to donate books that they add to the collection, ask if that's a possibility. Again, raising money for the library is not bad, but that might not be your intent. So ask. And whatever the case is for your local library, I love the idea. And I love that Dr. Anthony has that chance to do that. It is a great idea. So thanks for sharing that, buddy. That last episode also received social media love from Radioactive Dinosaur. Sir, I was Joe Crawford. Drew, from Comics for Fun and Profit. Chris, from Professor Frenzy, It's a Show. Laurel, a.k.a. Mountain Flower 1, King Dinosaur. Comics in the Golden Age, Greybeard the Grim, Sean from the Nerdy Dads, Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us. Karen from Between the Pages, Silver Fox, Randy Watts, Billy D. from Into the Weird, Manuel Carmona from Truthful Comics, writer and artist Sean Hall, Bill Baer of the Bat Pod, Clinton from Coffee and Comics, and Fan Film Fridays. Kirk Spencer, Big Five Army, Pat from the Long Box Crusade, Ed Moore, Paul Hicks from DCOCD, and from our listeners of the year, the Duchess and Duke of the Sutherlands, leaders of the Rad Adventures Network. Thanks for those supports, everybody. That was a pretty robust feedback section, so let's take a break here. And when we come back, we'll begin to talk about the books that I read during the first month of 2020.
Hello, PD Stories listeners. I'm Tom Morris Jr., and I'm excited for an all-new season of PD Stories with episodes dropping every Tuesday. We've got some incredible stories from officers across the country and a new focus on community impact. From U.S. Marshals to Chiefs, Majors, Sergeants, and more, you'll hear from those truly making a difference in the communities they serve. here's some of my favorite moments you can expect to hear in this season.
And she was hanging 11 floors up, and I was holding onto her arms and screaming for help. It was a point in my career when I realized, you know, how serious what we do is and that we are responsible for the lives of other people.
So I was in the back, we were doing the checkpoint, and I hear shot fire. The moment I hear that, I'm thinking in my mind, one of my Marines, he's shot.
The minute I got into law enforcement, I said, I want to find people that don't want to be found. So it's like an adult game of hide and seek, a serious adult game of hide and seek.
We remember the first time that we saw crack in the late 80s, and it just changed the whole face of the drug trade here and the violence that came along with it.
There were people running across the bridge to get out of the city. There was all smoke in the air, and someone's driver's license landed right in front of me.
From the World Trade Center?
Yes.
Wow.
I remember picking it up and really just, I didn't even know what to think. It really was a nightmare.
I felt like I was a role model for my community. Being black, it really benefited me. I still have the same and only cell phone number I've ever had from the police department. I still have it. And one of the reasons is because so many people in the community had that cell phone number.
How did you get into law enforcement?
It's because I got arrested. When I was 16 years old, got arrested for egging police cars. Made a big impression, turned my life around.
Our job is to also be a vanguard for communities of color, because they are being affected by police interactions. Right or wrong, when the interaction occurs, the point is that we have to do something to address those issues.
Back in the 60s, nobody ever heard of PTSD. But when you get out there and you see the dead bodies, it takes your toll on your psyche.
Get ready for some hard but important conversations about their toughest cases, policing in America, and some of the biggest challenges facing our country today, from mental health to race relations and more. Join me as we look behind the badge and walk a mile in an officer's shoes. Stay tuned. PD Stories is coming back with new episodes every Tuesday.
And we're back. And on to the books that I read last month. And as we do on this show, we're going to categorize those books that I read. And first are the issues that I read specifically for podcast appearances, the homework books. For Quarterbin Podcast 147, I read Batman 266. And then for 148, I read Detective Comics 465. Both of these come right out of the heart of the 1970s. And of course, on the national holiday, January 1st, which was not New Year's Day, I mean, I guess it was, but it was also Doomsday Point 4. I picked up the book that I talked about on the fourth episode of Doomspeak, Dr. Doom number 4. And comics I read for listening to podcasts, and there are more of these than there have been in the past, because DC Universe app, as Michael Bailey pointed out. And I love following along with comic book podcasts. I've told the story before, but following along with comic book podcasts, specifically Podcasting's Michael Bailey's From Crisis to Crisis, was how the quarter bin bug first bit me. And I love following along with comic book podcasts if I have the chance. And the app gives me more opportunities to have that chance. Now, first is one that I read a physical copy of, because Derek William Crabb sent me a Christmas care package that included Saved by the Bell number 1, which Derek and the other fan holes covered on episode 54 of Do You Read 'Em?, on which I briefly appeared. By the way, that podcast episode, way better than the comic book itself. And for listening along with Diane and Ashford on episode 22 of the Hunters podcast, I read Direct from the 1970s, All-Star Comics 69, 70, and 71, a storyline that constitutes the first appearance of Helena Wayne as Huntress. And in the next episode, they covered Detective Comics 652, which I read, the reintegration of Helena Bertinelli into the DCU. Now, that was a two-parter, and I couldn't resist. I couldn't wait. So I went ahead and read Detective 653 as well, which I imagine they'll cover in an upcoming episode. And to listen along with Mike Peacock's podcasting efforts on Justice's First Dawn, I read Justice League of America 113, 114, 116, and 117. And most of those were supersized books with one new story and a few classic reprints And in one case, the classic reprints were way better than the new story, but that is the risk you run. And this one just ended up fitting into this category sort of by accident, because just 3 days after buying JSA Strange Adventures number one at Carolina Comics and More from the three for a dollar box, the boys at Back to the Bins covered it. So I grabbed it off the stack and read it that morning to follow along. It was an interesting out-of-continuity story taking place in the golden age of science fiction and addressing the issues of what do fiction writers do in a world with superheroes. And I really liked how the series started in that issue. So again, I read that physical issue, though the other issues are on the app. And when the boys got to JSA Strange Adventures number 2 a few weeks later, I read that one too. And I certainly plan to continue that one at a time as Paul, Bill, and Scott cover this series, which I imagine they'll do on an intermittent schedule once or twice a month or so on Back to the Bins. And on to the new comics that we read right off the shelves. Dial H for Hero number 10. Miguel and Summer travel around the multiverse on behalf of the Operator, Robbie Reed, Sakamiji, in their battle against Mr. Thunderbolt. They end up on a world that mixes characters up in an amalgam sort of way. So they have Super Martian and Wonder Hawk. But their Dial H characters get incorporated as well with Miguel the Street and Lobo Kikyu. And amidst all of that wackiness, we get the dramatic revelation that Robbie Reed Sakamiji is not just the Operator, but he is also the evil Master Thunderbolt. And that is partly revealed on a page that is a Mad Magazine-style fold-in. This continues to be a fascinating, entertaining experiment of a series, and we are clearly heading into the home stretch, just a couple of issues left. Justice League Dark, number 18, another issue. Another bunch of battles with cool visuals, a few dramatic reveals, but again, I can't really explain what's happening, or I can't differentiate what's happening in this issue compared to most of the prior issues. I mean, time has passed, and some of the cast has changed. Dr. Fate is coming back next issue, but I really don't know what's happening, and that's a bummer. And from the good folks at Alterna, providers of new comics at the awesome price of $1.50, thank you, Newsprint, I picked up the last issue of a miniseries that I was saving to read altogether, and so I read The Adventures of Mr. Crypt and Baron Rat 1-3. I've read previous stories with each character and have found them delightful and fun, so I had to pick up this team-up adventure. Mr. Crypt is a skeleton who disguises himself with a mustache and a top hat, and Baron Rat, well, he's a rat. And together, these best friends get into much shenanigans, such as befriending Bigfoot and becoming race car drivers. Delightful, light, legitimately funny stories. Unfortunately, there were some delivery issues at Alterna, or production issues, that kept this from being released right before Christmas, because that third issue is a Christmas and holiday issue. But those things happen. I've enjoyed these, and they are definitely near the top. Mr. Crypt and Baron Rat, maybe at the top of the Alterna books that I've read. And also from Alterna, I picked up Gods and Gears number 2, which is telling a wacky story of time travel, adventuring, and yes, super smart talking monkeys. Okay, I admit, I'm not totally loving this one, but they're super smart talking monkeys. And that is keeping me engaged. I'm a simple man with simple tastes. And this is a new one, although I'm reading it off of Hoopla, but it is an ongoing title. And that's Archie, The Married Life, 10 years later, 4 and 5. We continue the 10-year revisit of the dual Archie gets married timelines. And in both versions, marrying Betty or Veronica, there are very high tensions among old friends. Relationships are sundering, bad choices being made. and Jughead is pretty sure he knows who is behind it all. Dilton Doiley. And only Dilton knows of the multiple realities. And he knows that these divisions have to be put right. Relationships healed, friendships restored to bring peace to both worlds and to all worlds. And with the end of issue 5, he has only one issue left to get it all done. I'm looking forward to seeing how this ends, and I want to give Archie a shout-out, the publisher, for having much, if not all, of their new books on Hoopla as single issues, pretty close to the time that the floppies go on sale. I appreciate that. And on to the general comic reading that I did. Sir Rob Lance, the generous Canadian, from the Comic Connection store in Oakville, Ontario, sent some books in over the summer, and I grabbed two of them and hid them as presents for my wife for Christmas, which she just flipped through before giving me to read. But they were comics that featured two of her crushes back in the day, so she got first crack at David Cassidy 14 and Bobby Sherman number 3. As comic stories, the Bobby Sherman one was better, but most importantly, both were still better than that terrible Partridge Family book I read early in the year. And my wife did enjoy looking through the pictures, and that is what matters. Rob also sent a strange and interesting book I wasn't familiar with, Treasure Chest of Fun and Fact 492. It was equally split between a long adventure story about snowmobile racing, and a series of biography and history stories. These included The Discovery of Insulin and a biography of composer Giuseppe Verdi. I did not know this book existed, and I found it just weirdly interesting, a real weird mix of stories, or as the title says, of fun and fact. Mentioned Derek William Crabb before. He sent in a big box of comics as a Christmas present. And I'll be honest, there were some that were interesting, including the aforementioned Saved by the Bell. But one of the ones that really jumped out at me that I grabbed first was from Dark Horse, Conan Road of Kings number 12, aka Dark Horse Conan 87, because they dual number their books based on the subtitle and based on the overall storyline. In this one, a young Conan breaks out of prison, takes out the corrupt judge and the incompetent guards, and with nowhere else to go in the city, he heads for the harbor, where next issue he will meet Belit, the Queen of the Black Coast. Now, I've read a few of the Marvel books from the Belit and Conan as Pirates era, and it was cool sort of leading up to that version of the story, although this one is again, the Dark Horse take on that story. Derek also sent the first book of a team-up series from Dark Horse, Grifter and the Mask, number 1, not bad, if a bit extreme, but the setting was Las Vegas, so I guess extreme is par for the course. Derek sent an excellent book from Epic Comics, Dreadstar Annual, number 2, which told the origin of the character Bishop Sigizzy Darklock. It's 46 pages of densely written, beautifully drawn Jim Starlin goodness. I haven't ever read a good run of Dreadstar, but the issues of it that I've run across here and there have always impressed me. And this one was very, very good. He also sent Detective Comics 685, written by Chuck Dixon, which is always a good thing. In this one, Batman and Robin take on King Snake, a white dude trying to take over the Taiwanese mobs in Gotham. It's a good concept, a well-done issue. I mean, of course, it was Chuck Dixon. He also sent a comic called So Dark the Rose, which was not so much a comic as an illustrated story, or even more precisely, an illustrated poem. Very interesting, a very pretty book, and not a bad poem. So a very cool use of the concept of serialized illustrations. He also sent War Machine 23 from the heart of the 90s, in which Rhodey has become bonded to the alien warware system. And this one, he heads into space to destroy a satellite that Tony has set up in collaboration with Kang the Conqueror. It was an interesting story, but it was so 90s. And speaking of the 90s, Sir Iowa's Joe sent in Dark Child number 5. Of course, Child is spelled C-H-Y-L-D-E, because 90s. And this one was not metaphorically hard to read. It was literally, physically hard to read the font and font color on the dark backgrounds. Also, it was an image book, so the pictures were the priority. I found that image books are often better if you can't make out all the words, so I guess it was sort of a win-win. And Kirk Spencer sent in a few books recently, including The Rocketeer, Hollywood Horror, number 1. I don't always love J. Bone's art, but it was a perfect fit for this old-timey type of story. And the story is pretty good. Cliff running from people who want the jetpack, and him standing up to Betty. And the Thin Man even makes a cameo appearance. Fun story, good stuff. Kirk also sent Wolverton, Thief of Impossible Objects, number 2, a Kickstarter book by Michael Stark. This is one of those stories that started life as a screenplay, and Stark brought in Terrell Garrett and Jackie Lewis to turn it into a comic book. And it's not a bad one either, telling a gentleman burglar story. And from Luke Giaconetti, I read the 1977 adaptation of Peter Benchley's other oceanic adventure novel turned film, The Deep. Decent movie and a decent comic book too. The story has 30 to 35 pages of content, and that helps get all the main beats of the movie into the comic. Now, it's been a while since I've seen the movie, so I don't know this for sure, but it seemed to me that the likenesses were not that great. From the 50 cent bins at Pulp Reality, and courtesy of the reprint issues, Marvel Superheroes King Size Special number 1 and Marvel Tales number 4, I read some really early, early old classic Marvel. Daredevil number 1, Spidey 7, Journey into Mystery 86, and Avengers number 2. The Matt Murdock intro issue is quite good other than the yellow forward costume. But the core story, battling Jack the Fixer, Foggy, Karen Page, it's all there. And though there may have been tweaks and expansions on the origin over the years, that core has remained pretty stable. As far as the story in Avengers 2 goes, I love Kirby's art. His big blocky Hulk is cool. Thor looks great. But between he and Stan, they just didn't know what to do with the Space Phantom as a villain. Lots of potential, I suppose, but just not executed to the high levels that they would achieve shortly thereafter. But nonetheless, they were both interesting reads, somewhat as historical artifacts, but also as good examples of what Marvel was trying to do in their early days. Spider-Man 7, with the return of the Vulture, was also an excellent story. Lee and Ditko really getting into their, pardon the pun, their swing of things. And from the 3-for-1 boxes at Carolina Comics and more, I read City of Heroes number 1, 2004, from Blue King Studios. This is a tie-in to the RPG. And considering that, it tells a pretty solid story with interesting characters, and that is something. There was backstory, relationships, and a story involving zombie cyborgs. So there was that, too. And some kids' books that I read, mostly from Sir Rob's care package, but also from Sir Iowa's Joe, and the 50-cent boxes from Pulp Reality. I read Pink Panther 23, Swing with Scooter 32, Betty and Veronica Special 2, Richie Rich and Casper 14 and 36, Dennis the Menace Bonus Magazine 181 and 188, The ALF Annual number 2, Archie at Riverdale High 1, 6, and 10, and the Archie at Riverdale High Collection, Volume 1. Those Archie at Riverdale High stories from the 70s, they were very good, including a few that had to do with the school's baseball team. And one of the stories was basically, you know, half an issue, 11 pages, of pretty much play-by-play of the championship game and the details, the facts, the baseball stuff. It was actually quite good. Clearly, the scripter was a fan of the game, a student of the game, actually. So that was pretty cool. And the ALF annual had some okay stories in it, along with lots and lots of terrible, terrible puns. Look, I like puns, but even at that, these were pretty bad and way too plentiful. And I also need to mention one of the Dennis the Menace books, 181, in which Dennis and their family visit San Diego. Because it could have been written by the tourist bureau of that city. I looked through the book from cover to cover and saw no formal legal indication that it was a sponsored book. But it had to be. I mean, and it was just weird reading it. All right, we will take another break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about the graphic novels, trade paperbacks, and long runs that I read in January. And we will get to all of that right after this.
Hi, I'm Ruth.
And I'm Darren of the Rad Adventures Network.
We're a married couple who enjoy great stories of all kinds, including adventures, mysteries, science fiction, and fantasy.
Please join us for a variety of podcasts focused on a range of pop culture topics.
Trekker Talk is about 23rd century bounty hunter Mercy St. Clair from the comic Trekker by writer and artist Ron Randall. It's a blend of classic sci-fi adventures and noir mysteries set in a retro future.
Xenozoic Xenophiles is about the comic Xenozoic Tales by writer and artist Mark Schultz. It's a post-apocalyptic adventure series filled with Cadillacs and dinosaurs.
Warlord Worlds covers the many comics of writer and artist Mike Grell, including The Warlord, John Sable, Green Arrow, and the Legion of Superheroes.
Sensational Sleuths, where we talk about favorite mystery novels, movies, and TV shows.
Fantastic Fantasies, where we share our favorite fantasy films and books.
And Amazing Adventures, where we discuss action-packed adventure stories.
Listen on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and YouTube. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Or visit radadventuresnetwork.com to find all of our shows and links to our social media pages.
That's RAD, R-A-D, which is short for Ruth and Darren.
And we're back to talk about the trades, long runs, and miniseries that I read last month. And we start with a book that Kirk Spencer sent me, sort of as a challenge. He posted on Twitter that it was the worst book he'd ever read. I said I would give it a shot. And along with this note, I give this comic an F. You said you would give it a try. May God grant you strength. He sent me Dead of Winter, Good Dog, 1-4, from Oni. Based on a tabletop game, this is a zombie book featuring a former TV show stunt dog who now really, really hates zombies. The characters are not interesting, the funny bits are not, and the story doesn't really hold together, but at least the ending was terrible. I can say one good thing about this trade. It was a quick read. Kirk also sent two issues of a series of black and white books from North Star Publishing from 1989, Omen 2 and 3. Now, I read a lot of black and white books from this era, but had never seen Omen before. It was a decent fantasy story with lots of prose in it. It did make me wonder if it was originally conceived as a short story or novel, and the writer maybe converted it to that format. Also, the name of the main character was clearly not Omen when the story was originally laid out and scripted, because every time it appears in the book, there is room for another 4 or 5 or 6 letters in the narration box. They clearly erased something longer and put Omen in its place. But you know, that sort of thing is kind of the charm of teeny tiny indie books from any era, I think. And I read a couple of books from Cheap Boxes, Checkmate 2 and 11 from the Greg Rucka run, and this is a great series. And unfortunately, I've just jumped in and out of it. I've never really sat down and read a good long run of it. But I should. I know this. So don't tell me. I also read some related books, at least by title, if not by the actual character. That is Ghost Rider number 2 from 2002 and Cosmic Ghost Rider Destroys Marvel History 1 through 4 from last year. The first one, and I can't remember who sent that one into me, is the Danny Ketch version, and he is going all pen and stare on some young punks wrapped up in a game that is way too big for them. The other series, Cosmic Ghost Rider Destroys Marvel History, was sent in by Sir I Was Joe, and is the Frank Castle version of Ghost Rider, complete with the power Cosmic. And in this series, he travels back to the past to prevent his own family's murders. But mostly the series is an excuse for Frank Rider to tell his version of Marvel history, which includes Cosmic Ghost Rider in every important role, in every important bit of Marvel history, like as one of the original Fantastic Five and killing Hitler and his long-standing rivalry with Logan. It is a very odd bird of a series, and you have to be up for the conceit, for the concept of what it is. If you can turn off the voice that says, "But that's not how it happened," and click with the sense of humor of the book, it could work for you. It's not for everyone. And I'm not locked that hard into Marvel history, and I think that certainly helped me to enjoy it. And from the DCU app, I read a short series of deluxe, i.e. more expensive than normal, issues of a title that intrigued me, but I thought was worth waiting for because it was too expensive. So I read last year's Mystic U 1 through 3. It's another one of those series that brings together bunches of DC magic users, in this case, sort of in a Harry Potter sort of way. Zatanna and others are students at a magical university, literally called Mystic U, with a staff and faculty that includes Cain and Abel, Mr. E, Madame Xanadu, the June Moon Enchantress, Dr. Occult, and many others. And they all have to join forces, even the ones we may suspect of being not what they appear, to battle the malevolence. I'm a sucker for this type of story. I love the mystical side of the DCU. And it took place at a college, so I was pretty much in and gonna enjoy it no matter what. I read two related books sent in by Rob Lance and the crazy cat lady Brenda. These are from Gold Key, circa 1974. Dagar, The Invincible, 6 and 9. Not a lot to distinguish this guy from a whole lot of other similar adventure-y characters. But the story in issue 9 does stand out. Dagar is hired to retrieve a stolen gem, except that it wasn't stolen, and the guy that hired him is the true bad guy. So Dagar tracks down the supposed thief, who's actually a good guy, using the gem to heal his wife from illness, and they fight for a while, but eventually team up and take down the real bad guy. And the wife is healed. It's a really good story, much better than I've gotten used to from small publisher adventure stories of this era. And a similar series, again, all sent in by Sir Rob, was The Jungle Twins, 2, 6, and 8, from Gold Key, featuring the adventures of Tono and Kono. The premise is, and this is language from issue 2, orphaned white twins reared by Jungle Chief Mulo. Although the Black Tribe was not a significant part of the story in issue 6 and 8, I don't know if they just moved past that premise quickly, because by then it was just twins having wild adventures in the jungle. And they did use the twin part as plot points for trickery and deceiveration, and that was fun. So shaky bits here and there, but actually pretty good adventure stories. Sir, I was Joe Crawford, sent in the start of a 2019 series from Ahoy Comics, hashtag danger, 1 through 4. It's a cartoony, silly book, and I don't mean that to be dismissive because it's solid. It's the tale of a group of young adult adventurers, team, hashtag danger, who really just want to be famous and do cool stuff. And the becoming famous part, that's not really working out for them. This is full of social media references and the sillier aspects of modern life. And I like that. And the characters are all likable in their own ways. And I quite enjoyed this. I think this might be the first series I've read from Ahoy. And like I said, I enjoyed it. Dr. Anthony the Engineer sent a Boom miniseries from 2013, Protocol Orphans 1 through 4, about an international group of paramilitary and espionage operatives who use like family terminology to describe their relationships, like in the way Checkmate uses chess language. So we have grandparents and parents and orphans, and those are all symbolic terms. A new team is just getting into the field for the first time, and when a traitor arises that puts the entire operation at risk, our new orphans don't know who to trust, including whether to trust each other. So it's an interesting story, an interesting world build. A little confusing at points, but overall I'm pretty sure I liked it. And from Sir I Was Joe, I read some very strange Dark Horse comics. Trout, The Hollowest Knock 1 through 3. Dave Stewart does the art on these, and that was a nice fit, a nice treat. Broadly, I think this is about an odd-looking fella caring for an odd-looking baby. The baby is Trout. And they fall overboard into the inky depths of the ocean. And all of the creepy, crawly things deep down in the ocean? Well, that's when things get weird. Again, not quite sure what to make of this one, but it was interesting. I talked about Derek William Crabb and the package of comics that he sent before. Derek is, of course, from the Fanhole podcast, and he sent a bunch of old Legion of Superheroes stories, and I supplemented with a couple from Hoopla as well. And overall, I read Adventures 347 through 349, and then skipped up to 352 through 354. There are some totally wacky and silly stories in here, but we also get the introduction of the Fatal Five, and I think that's a step forward for the team. We get, in that same story, the introduction of the Sun Eater, one of the most powerful, and spoilers, deadly foes ever faced by the Legion. A Legionnaire does, in fact, die in that adventure. We also get one of the first Legion stories I ever read, though I didn't read it in Adventures 354, but I read it in a reprint from about 10 years later, DC Superstars number 3. And this is the story of the adult Legion. And it really had a powerful effect on me because I collected and read the Legion for about 15 years after that. So really glad to revisit that one. Derek sent in some more of these, and I imagine I will get back to them next month or the month after. And from Hoopla, I read some more of a DC series I've been working on. This time it's Batman 70 to 74, and also Batman Secret Files number 2. The nightmares are over, you might say finally over, but Batman, he's still not sure what's going on, including running into the Thomas Wayne from another universe. And he isn't totally sure yet what happened with the whole cat wedding thing, other than the fact that he had kind of been off his game, and that Bane seemed to have been behind it all. I've enjoyed Tom King's run on the issue, and I think it's a shame that his run didn't get to the whole 100 issues, but I guess he will continue his work in the upcoming Batman Catwoman title. So I do think I'm looking forward to that. Although all of these post-wedding, as interesting as they've been in theory, they have moved at a glacial pace. I imagine I would have gotten very frustrated if I were reading the books month to month, paying a pretty penny for them. But as a Hoopla trade, the slow pace feels more like suspense and build-up, and less like the, I paid how much for another issue that was nothing but a dream? I get that. I do. I also read a trade mostly from Sir I Was Joe, but with an assist from Hoopla, and that was Invisible Kingdom 1 through 5. It's got a lot of the story elements that I like. A religious lead character, science fiction, business aspects. And G. Willow Wilson tells a very interesting story with that mix of elements. I know that lots of people like this, so just to add my voice to that chorus, I will agree with that. Most of what it tried, it did really well, and I look forward to checking out the next trade when it shows up. Also on Hoopla, I found an IDW series that intrigued me, The X-Files, Year Zero, 1-5. Mulder and Scully get involved in a case that harkens back to the earliest days of The X-Files. Before, as a matter of fact, the TV episode that gave us the supposed first X-Files case. So what the comic series does is bounce back and forth between the current day and the 1940s version, which included their version of a Mulder and Scully. The back and forth really works well, and we slowly learn more about both cases and their relationship to another. And in a bonus moment that actually worked, I think, we get an explanation for the X part of X-Files. Good story, and as I always have to say, when dealing with licensed books, the likenesses here are pretty good. X-File comics have, generally speaking, been pretty good, I found, wherever the license has landed. And again, from Hoopla, I read another trade of a series that I read some of last month. From Dynamite, Red Sonja 13 through 18. And these are the issues that wrap up the Gail Simone run on the character, telling stories about forgiveness and personal growth. This does manage to wrap up that entire 18-issue run very nicely. It was a good run. One of my favorite things that Gail Simone has done. And that's someone who generally isn't one of my favorite comic book writers. But I liked the mix of character work and action plots, and Sonja had a very consistent narrative voice with, like I said, some character arc, some character growth. The books had a lot of variant covers, including quirky and delightful ones by Stephanie Buscema, but the main covers by Jenny Frisson were excellent, giving the run a consistent and consistently excellent look. And one more trade from Hoopla, picking up on a series I read some of a few months ago, Suicide Risk 10 through 13. At this point, the series has turned totally into a weird sci-fi tale. It was a story of people selling superpowers, and now it's moved to address where exactly those superpowers came from. And the answer is a parallel world. But we also get an entire alternate Earth justice system, a high-tech alternate justice system, and that's an interesting take. One thing I can say about this series, it is not predictable from trade to trade, and I do think I'm going to pick up the next one at some point. And I think that's everything. In terms of my favorite reads of the month, that So Dark the Rose, a sort of illustrated poem, that was very good. Bronze Age Batman is always a hoot. Mystic U was fun. I enjoyed a lot of Archie at Riverdale High. And of course, Dr. Doom was very good. Saved by the Bell and David Cassidy were... Okay, I'm just kidding. Those last two weren't good at all. But in terms of what I thought was my favorite, I think I'm going to go with the Dreadstar Annual. Jim Starlin at his heights, great sci-fi comics with some fantasy elements. Very good. Next month, we have an occurrence that happens about every 28 years and has not happened since 28 years ago, 1992. And that is a February with 5 Saturdays. And what that means for this show is two things. It'll be released a few days further into the month than usual, and it will probably be longer than usual with 5 weeks of content to cover. I'm not really sure what I'm going to be reading other than some more of those old adventure comics that Derek sent in, and I'll probably dip back into Suicide Risk, or maybe pick up one of the older series that I haven't read for a while, like Descender. But other than that, who knows? But whatever I do end up reading, I will be here to talk about the books I read in February, and that episode should be out sometime the first full week of March. Feel free to let me know what you think of this episode, what you think of any of these books that I mentioned, especially if you've read any of them. You can send that feedback via email, relativelygeeky@gmail.com, or as a comment on the Facebook or blog post for this episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. You can follow the network on Twitter at relatively_geek. And of course, the network has its own page on Facebook as well. Come join us. All are welcome. Thanks for listening, and keep the pages turning.